Vinitaly is the largest wine and spirits fair in the entire world, and it's coming up in April in Verona, Italy. I was just in Verona myself, and I totally loved it. But have you ever had the chance to go yourself? If you have never been to Vinitaly, and you are a professional wine buyer for an importer, retailer, or restaurant focused on Italian wine, I may have a ticket for you to be there. There will be a buyer's trip to the Vinitaly Fair on April 10th through the 13th of 2016, and it will be an excellent chance to attend one of the most extensive wine tasting opportunities on earth. There will be regional focused tastings. There will be extensive tastings of top producers, like the Opera Wine Tasting on the 9th of April, featuring 100 great wineries. And there will be opportunities to meet face to face with a number of growers at your own pace. Very awesomely, there is a travel stipend available to attend. If you are a wholesale buyer, all you have to do to get started is to send an email to media@vinitalytour.com. That's media@vinitalytour.com with a paragraph describing your work as a buyer and your interest in Italian wine. There will also be other Vinitaly organized events coming up in the States, and those will be good opportunities for those interested to learn more about the buyer's program that will be headed to Verona in April. If you want to know more, you should seek those events out. Vinitaly's American tour will be in New York City on the 9th of February and in Miami on the 10th of February. Write to media@vinitalytour.com for further details. The Vinitaly Fair is a tremendous opportunity to experience what Italy has to offer. I personally can't recommend it enough. If you are a wholesale buyer, this is a great chance to be in Verona tasting for yourself with producers you care about. I highly recommend that you do so. I'll drink to that, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Are you guys ready to get warmed up? Because I am.
It can't be underestimated how intertwined the oak and the wine are in the Rioja wine region. Spain has a long history of winemaking dating back thousands of years, but amphoras and animal skins were the primary vessels for fermentation and transport until about 250 years ago. In 1786, a wealthy priest named Manuel Quintano spent time in Bordeaux evaluating how winemaking differed there than in Spain. And he brought back, among other things, techniques of oak aging, fining, and racking. He believed that by racking and fining, you removed particles that contributed to the wine's ability to go bad. A fined and racked wine could age longer and be more travel-worthy. His family began using the techniques he recommended, but they didn't become widespread until after his death. By the late 1800s and early 1900s, very large oak casks were the norm in Rioja. These huge wooden tanks often stood on stilts, and in the event of a stuck fermentation, a small fire lit underneath could help move things along. You can still see such vessels on display at La Rioja Alta. The oak tanks were large enough for a few people to climb in from the top, making them easy to clean, and they were built for long-term use. Over time, tartrates were meant to build up on the inside, forming a thick, insulary layer, preventing oxidation and the imparting of wood flavors. These gigantic wooden tanks can still be seen all over Rioja. A few bodegas, such as Lopez de Heredia, still use these large wooden tanks. Some of them are several generations old. But for most of the older bodegas, today they are kept primarily as relics, and they've been replaced by stainless steel fermenters and concrete tanks. The large wood fermenters were not easily transportable, so wine would have been moved to bota bags for transport until the 1700s, when smaller oak barrels became the shipping vessel of choice for this region. And once the railroad came to Aro in 1880, winemakers had an outlet to sell more wine, and barrels were a compact and sturdy way to get wine from point A to point B. The wine industry bustled to the point where wineries needed to hire their own coopers to keep up with the oak barrel demands. In Spain, you'll still find wineries with large production employing in-house coopers. At Viña Real, for instance, the oak needs are tremendous, and by the time they finish racking the supply, they'll need to start over again, making racking a full-time job. Depending on how long the wine ages, The liquid may be racked into a few different barrels over the course of its élevage. Sometimes the barrels will be different types or ages, contributing to the complexity of the wine. Before the estate bottling era, oak barrels would ship much of the wine, but in the 1900s, a shift in perception occurred. Before this period, the larger wooden fermenting vessels were seen as permanent winery structures, while smaller barrels were good for short-term racking use and ultimately for use as shipping vessels. But later, when mechanically produced bottles became cheap and efficient means of shipping liquid, smaller oak barrels also came to be seen as permanent winery objects for in-house use. Barrels lost their export function after the age of industrialization and became useful for racking, storing, and as flavoring agents. The flavor of oak is largely determined by its provenance and species. French oak has different flavors than smaller-grained American oak, and depending on how these oaks are priced in the market, you'll find different periods of popularity for certain oaks. When Quintano first studied Bordelais techniques, he sourced French oak from similar sources of his Bordeaux contacts. But later fluctuations in the market led to a shift towards American oak. Today you'll find a mix of both, and other types of oak too, in Rioja wineries. This shift in perception is an interesting example of when function becomes form. When the use of an object becomes obsolete and the object takes on a different role. Oak is so integrated in wine culture, in so many wine regions, that its use is written into many appellation laws. In Rioja, what determines the difference between a crianza and a gran reserva will be the length of time it spends in oak. Now, there's a little bit more to it than that. Wineries will, of course, generally divert their best crops to their gran reservas, so the difference in perceived quality is a little bit more involved than just pointing to oak aging. But in less than three centuries, a major shift in what defines quality has occurred, and a large part of this shift has happened due to the uses of oak and the nuances of the oak industry. There's one Rioja winery that's been around long enough to watch the evolution of the barrel in Rioja. Stay tuned to hear more from this historic winery.
I'm Michelle Basilia, wine director of Blue Hill, New York City.
Lee Campbell from Diner in Brooklyn.
This is Sharon Severins from Amonte Vino in Montclair, New Jersey.
Patrick Capiello, Rebel and Pearl and Ash.
Ian Doran from the Wine Library.
Jeremy Noy, Morel Fine Wine Retail and Wine Bar at Rockefeller Center.
These tri-state buyers all know that 750 is a one-stop resource for the beverage alcohol trade. Search across distributor portfolios, see trade tastings, and easily connect with your sales rep. It's free and easy to sign up.
Dalmau Sebrian Sagariga on the show.
Yeah, exactly. Long name. Long name, Levy.
From Marcus de Marietta. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Just arrived from Spain, from Rioja, and happy to be here in New York. Wonderful city.
So your family owns two wineries.
Levy, we own two wineries in the north of Spain. One is based in Galicia, northwest of Spain, on top of Portugal. A winery based in white wines. I'm sure that you heard about the Albariño grape. A winery that has been together with us since 1511, a nice state, not very big, around 40 acres, all planted with this grape, Albariño, in a nice valley called Salnes Valley, inside a wine region called Rías Baixas, house from 1511, and we built a new winery like 20 years ago. Really, really tiny production. And the second winery is in a well-known wine region, that is Rioja, next to the Basque area, next to Bordeaux, in the north of Spain also. And there we own this project, a project that was founded in 1852. First wines of Rioja were Marqués de Murrieta wines. And there our estate is larger. Is 800 acres in Rioja Alta, Do you know Rioja is divided in three areas? One is Rioja Alta, the one I said. Rioja Alavesa is the Basque area of Rioja. And the Rioja Baja, the most southern part of Rioja. We are based in Rioja Alta, just in the middle of this big, large state. The largest state in Rioja, and one single, unique parcel. Really unique state, where you could see vines from, average vines there have 50 years old, but you could see vines from 100 years, vines that we day by day look after them. We are one of the only wineries where all our grapes are our own. We don't buy any grape, we don't buy any wine. We are the only winery, Levy, concentrating in the production of Reserva and Grandet Reserva wines, not Crianthas, no young wine. So just concentrating premium wines and the high end. So this is what I'm doing in Spain. Two wineries, as I said, based in the north of Spain.
And Marcus de Murrieta is basically the first producer of Rioja, along with Riscal.
Exactly. The first wines were made by one guy called Luciano de Murrieta, the founder of this winery, a guy who studied for 3 years in Bordeaux, in France, everything about wine. And he was the one who brought the French techniques to Rioja. When I talk about French technique, it's the aging of the wine in barrel, aging of the wine in bottle before they are released. He was the first. The fresh wines are from 1848. He sent his first wines to the export market to South America in 1851. And he received wonderful news from Mexico, from Cuba, telling him that the wine traveled in perfect conditions and that the wine was really good in terms of quality. So he decided in 1852 to really begin this project. That's why we say that this year, 1852, was the first year of Marqués de Murrieta. This winery has been always in his family's hand until 1983, when my father decided to buy it. To buy the property, the winery, the wines, and as I said, coming from Galicia, and it was a great change for the family. My father was felt in love with this winery, with these wines. My father died 20 years ago, really, really young, Levy, when he was just 47 years old. And since then, since 1996, I've been looking after both projects since I was really, really young. I was 25 years old. Happy that my father decided one day to jump into Marqués de Murrieta. Happy that my family has been always next to wine. I'm a wine lover. So I'm totally in love with this world. Totally in love.
What do you think attracted your father to the Marqués de Murrieta estate and property?
I think several things. My father was already involved in wine in Galicia. I think that it was a pity that he left us too soon, because I would love. There were many questions in my mind to ask him, but I'm sure that he loved the history of this winery. And one day he had a wonderful, how he said in English, decision to say, yes, I want this winery. He bought it, and since then, the whole family is really, really, really happy, really, really happy. My father was also involved in other companies, but he was totally in love with wine, and 80% of his time was wine, wine, wine. So, but he was really attracted, and he really felt in love with this project in Rioja.
There was a fair amount of revitalization that he started at the property.
Yeah, when he arrived there in 1983, the situation of this company, of this winery, was not the ideal situation. The family didn't invest in the last 20, 25 years. So he decided to make a huge investment in the state. We planted more vineyards. He invested a lot of money in the winery. But especially he traveled and traveled and traveled. I began to work with him when I was 17, Levy. he decided that I needed to study and work at the same time. This was not easy. I remember that was not easy. When I was 17, he decided that I was going to become the new export manager. So his work, together with my work, promoting the wines around the world, made that Murrieta, let's say, return again to the first league. I don't know if you have this word here in U.S., in Spain, in Europe. When you talk about soccer, about football, you talk about first league, second league. When you are in the first league, that means that you are one of the top players of that league. So after his investment and after the history of this, the long history of this winery, Marques de Murrieta went back to this first league.
What was your dad like as a person?
He was a really honest person, hard work person, serious guy, responsible, a guy that really created a solid family. I had three sisters younger than me, but he created a wonderful atmosphere in this family, a family that was work day by day in our projects. And as I said, very enthusiastic. When he died, and it was not easy for me, Levy, to be by my own just with 25 and being responsible of a really important project. But I discovered that since I began to work with him when I was 17, I discovered that all this philosophy, this way of being he transmitted me was inside my body. So when I was alone, I began to breathe all the things he showed me. Very special guy. I always, every single week, day, week, month, year, remembered him.
I imagine that some people in a similar situation might have sold the winery. Young guy, all of a sudden it's on you to take care of. What was going through your mind? What was important to you at the time?
That moment, first of all, the memory of my father was in my mind. I wanted to continue with this project, with both projects, because of him. And at the same time was a challenge for me. I worked together with him for 8 years. So it was also a challenge for me. Let's show to my family, let's show to all the people that is around me that I'm able to do this, that I'm stronger enough to continue with all these projects. It was not easy. Well, not easy, Debbie, because I was young. It was not easy to see that everyone was looking at you day by day. And they were really controlling, let's say, into brackets, controlling you. Not easy, but with the effort, with work, many hours of work, at the end, results were there. And now I'm sure that many people that at the beginning had some doubts about me, about the future of this project, now it's, let's say, calm to see that one of the key wineries of Spain is now in good hands, let's say that, in good hands. And when I say good, I'm not telling you that I'm the best, but I say good that as my father was, serious, honest. And I think that honesty in life is very important, but in wine, it's important. And it's something that you always see when you taste a wine. This wine is honest, is it not honest? I think that nature offers us every single vintage a wonderful, wonderful product that is grapes. And the only thing you need to do is offer to a market, to your client, what nature did, and trying to do an honest work at the winery, trying to show you, the market, what exactly nature, that soil you have, that state you have, it's offering to you every single day.
What did you see as your first projects?
The first 2 years, 3 years, my target was just to watch. Of course, I work day by day, but I really didn't create any project, any strategy, long-term strategy. At the beginning, I just balance myself as a human being, as a winery owner. I saw how my father's team was working, how I spoke with the wine, I spoke with the vineyards, with the vines. And after these 2-3 years, I began a new project at the winery, at both wineries. And this project was to really maintain the identity of both projects. But my challenge was to update both projects, all the wines inside these two projects. So the first thing I did is I create a new team working with me, young team that had the same feeling of what I wanted to do. Really, really young people that we were 26 years old, 27 years old, that in one way that was, surprise to see a winery with more than 100 years old in hands of really young people or team that was really going to respect this identity, was going to respect the history of both wineries. But the only thing that we wanted is to add youth in these two projects. New team, new project for the wines. For the wines that we already been producing for years, wines like Marqués de Murrieta, Reserva Red, Castillo y Gay Red, or the white Marqués de Murrieta. With these three wines, we began a process to update the style of the wines.
How so? I mean, what did you do?
First thing we did is, after our conversation with the state, with the vines, we really selected which grapes were going to go to each wine. We were totally obsessed in looking for a more balance between fruit and oak. Rioja, Levis, it's well known because of the long aging in oak. And sometimes this means less fruit in the wine. Wines that are released after a long, long period of oak, of aging in oak. We were not so happy with this. We wanted to balance oak and fruit. We offered to the wines less time in oak. We changed, not drastically, we changed a bit the oak, offering to the wine new oak at the beginning. We were not used to age wines in new oak at Marqués de Murrieta, and especially at Rioja, I said. And we decided to change a bit all our barrels. At this moment, 40% of our 12,000 barrels is new oak. So we balanced this new oak with aged, older oak. Looking for this. We're looking for fruit presence in the wine. Looking for a subtle oak, well-integrated oak. But looking for this fruit and oak balance. We were obsessed in looking for elegance, 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 elegance. We were obsessed in looking for a balanced acidity in the wine, looking for sweet, rounded, silky tannins. So with this philosophy, we worked with these three wines. This was not done in 1 year. We needed seven years to really transform all the wines. Always, always maintaining our identity, our soul. And then at the same time, I created some new wines that could accompany these traditional classic wines. And this new wine was called Dalmau.
After you, your name.
Yeah, my name. The thing is that I needed time to transform all these wines. So I didn't want to rush with this. It was a long process. So I decided, together with this, at the beginning when my father died, and this was 15 years ago, to create a new style, totally different. Wine, a more modern Rioja. Now they're beginning to call this type of wines, as in Italy, the super Riojas, more concentration, more alcohol, still elegant. We blend some grapes there that before were blend into Marqués de Murrieta. And this wine, Dalmau, we blend Tempranillo, the most important grape in Rioja and in our state. Nearly 85% of our grape in Igae is Tempranillo. We blend it with a grape, famous grape in Rioja called Graciano, a grape that you can just find it in Rioja, where we are now investing in that grape and planting more Graciano and more Graciano. This Graciano offers to the wine, Levy, a lot of tannins, acidity, wonderful fresh nose. So we offer to this new wine, Dalmau, the classic Tempranillo, Tempranillo that was an 80-year-old Tempranillo, 80. We add a 5-6% of Graciano, and then we add a grape that was planted in the Gai State since 1950. It was a very short production of Cabernet Sauvignon that, as you know, it's forbidden in Rioja in the sense that it's not a native grape. But we were allowed to have this small production. We just produced 3,000 kilograms of this grape. So I decided to offer this grape an exclusive basis to this wine, to this Dalmau. We worked for 4 years with this wine, and at the end we found the correct blending. For the first time in the history of Murrieta, of Marqués de Murrieta, we aged this wine in French oak. Always Murrieta has been next to American oak. So for the first time, we move into French oak, new French oak. For the first time, we offered to this wine less time in oak. Murrieta, the old classic styles of Murrieta spent in oak, minimum 4-5 years. We offered to this wine less than 2 years time, 18 months, 19 months, looking for this balance between fruit and oak. Wine that was bottled and was released 6 months after that, no more, trying to offer it to the market, a really new concept. So apart from the as I said, transforming, updating all the wine that we were working with them since 1852, we released the new style, and we began to send with this wine, Dalmau, and that's why I decided to put my name in this wine, because it was going to help me to send a message to the market that something was happening inside the winery, that there was a new captain, young captain, inside the winery, and a captain that wanted to do new things inside the winery and wanted to create the next 100 years of a really classic winery as Marqués de Murrieta. It was a long, long process, and now, after 20 years, it is consolidated, and now wines... the last vintages you could see from our winery, 2010 Marqués de Murrieta, 2010 our white that is called Capellanía, or the Castillo de Gai 05, 07. So you could see now the real new era of our wines, and together with it you could see this wine Dalmau offering a new concept of Rioja. And at the same time in Galicia we did the same. We were producing an Albariño that we was also updated. And at the same time, we decided, the same as Dalmau, we decided to create another wine in Galicia called La Comtesse, a wine that was for the first time in Rías Baixas, of course in our winery, but in the whole Rías Baixas appellation, was the first wine fermented in oak and aged in oak. Albariño hates wood. Wood hates Albariño. So the challenge was how we are going to balance these two things, this fruit, this grape with oak. We stood 9 years with this project. And after 9 years working and investing in this project, we decided that French oak was the best oak for this Albariño. And just 1 year of oak was enough to balance both fruit and oak. And at the end, after this 9 years of work, we made the Albariño and oak friends. So apart from the updating of Pazo de Barrantes Albariño, the young Albariño, we created, the same as in Rioja Dalmau, this wine, La Comtesse.
So you got rid of Crianza. You decided to stop making the Crianza category, and you introduced Dalmau.
as you know, it's a wine that goes to the market earlier, but it's in a very different style than what you'd think of as a Crianza wine.
Yes, as you said, Levy, in the history of Marqués de Murrieta, there's always been a Crianza. Crianza, there are wines that spend less time in oak, a minimum of 1 year in oak, and minimum of 2 years inside the winery. I decided to forget about these wines, and I decided to concentrate our offer, our production, just in wines with a longer time of aging in oak and in bottle. This is called reservas. And to concentrate all the concept of Gran Reserva in our well-known brand, our icon, Castillo y Gay, and concentrate all our knowledge in these two wines. I think that we are well known around the world of how Marqués de Murrieta aged wines in oak. So this is part of our strength. So I decided to concentrate our strength in this philosophy and try to send a very clear and direct message to the market. Marqués de Murrieta is this. Four wines, all aged for a long time in oak, where you could see this balance between fruit and oak. But that's something that I wanted when I began this, to be the boss or the captain in this project. I decided to send this clear, clean message to the market. One wine, one style, one label, one style. You know that in Rioja, in Spain, you could see the same name, the same brand, with different styles of wine. You could see, I'm not going to tell you any brand, but you could see the same brand with Jam Wine, Crianza, Reserva, and Gran Reserva, and sometimes a fifth wine with the same brand, the same name. I decided, no, I want people to think that Marqués de Murrieta is just one style of wine, Castilla y Gay is just one style of wine, Dalmau is just one style of wine. I don't want, with the same name, three different style of wines. So I decided to forget about Crianzas and Jam wines, and I created this new style called Dalmau, that is also sold under the back label Reserva, but I decided to forget about all these Crianzas. Last Crianza, also called Etiqueta Blanca, as you said, in our offer was 1982. So since 1983, everything was out of this concept of Crianzas.
So your father purchased what is known as the Igai estate, and you make a wine called Igai. And what is that like?
Igai, the name of the estate, it's called Igai. The first building, it's a castle, and the name of the building is Castillo y Gay. Castillo means a chateau, Chateau y Gay. And the first wine that was created there was called Chateau y Gay. In 1917, this name was moved into Castillo y Gay. Castillo y Gay, it's made every single year. That is not released every single year. We just release this wine when we think it's really special, really unique. These wines are coming from the highest area in our state, in the Igai state, around 550 meters of altitude, and coming from an 85-year-old Tempranillo. Basically, this wine is always between an 80 and a 90% of this grape, and is blend with a really special grape that is Mazuelo. Mazuelo, it's Carignan. In Rioja, it's called a Mazuelo. And it's a unique grape that offers to the wine really high acidity. And this is important, as you know, Levy, when you create wines that they are going to live in barrel for, or stay in barrel or age in barrel for a long time, and wines that are left in bottle for a long, long period of time. This grape offers this acidity, and this means freshness, and this means longevity. The Mazuelo that we are offering to this wine is a 75-year-old Mazuelo. with very, very low yields. I'm talking about one bunch, two bunches maximum per vine. We do a green cutting in summer, looking for the really unique style and quality. A grape that is harvested at the end. I'm talking about end of October, November. A grape, a Mazuelo, and this Tempranillo that both are fermented by its own in stainless steel, in small tanks of stainless steel. A Tempranillo that is aged in American oak for a minimum of 3 years. New oak at the beginning, always, let's say, 10 months, between 8 to 1 year in new oak. And then this wine is jumped, is racked into an older barrel. And the Mazuelo that is it's aged in this new era that we spoke before is aged in new French oak at the beginning. And again, it's moved, is racked into an older barrel, French oak, after months in barrel. After this, both grapes, when we decide the blending, are moved into concrete for 1 year, trying to look for their total, balance. And after this year in concrete, wine is bottled, and we leave it for a minimum, always, always a minimum of 3 years in bottle before its release. And after this minimum time, we decided if the wine is going to stay more time in bottle or we release it, okay? We are now selling here the 05 vintage. We are jumping in some months to 07 vintage. So it's not easy, Levy, to see a winery that is releasing wines after 10 years inside the winery. I'm going to tell you a secret now that just you and me are here, okay? And it's soon we will release a Castillo Igae white wine. I was talking about the red wines that we've been working always in the history of a winery. We've always been producing white wines. I know that Rioja is not really well known because of the whites. It's more known because of the reds.
But you guys made a big investment in the Capilania white.
Exactly, but we've always been there since the beginning. So we are well known, the Murrieta red wines and white wines, and really special white wines because they are white wines aged for a long time in oak. So always in our history, we've been creating Castillo de Gai white that spent minimum 22 years in oak. We will release a 1986 Levy, 1986 white Castillo de Gai after 22 years in American oak, 22 years in American oak, coming from a grape called Viura. Viura is a Macabeo. You call it here Macabeo, the same grape, and is the most important white grape in Rioja. I insist that whites are it's a very, very small percentage in Rioja. After being 15 years without any Castillo de Gai in the market, 15, last Castillo de Gai was 1970, we return to this style and we will release 1986. Wines with a wonderful golden color, with a unique nose, really complex nose, with so many, many things in that you could find in this nose, honey, almonds, flowers, fruit balanced with oak. This oak, this 22 years in oak, I'm not talking about a young new oak. No, I'm talking about really old barrels, 40, 50-year-old barrels, that the inside is full of tartrates. So it's like a huge bottle, and there's not oxygen passing through. No?
So that's pretty exciting, actually, that it's going to be a revitalization of a historical white Rioja. You don't see so many. I mean, you see some more modern-style white Rioja. You see Lopez, of course, in the traditional idiom. But I feel like a lot of people kind of abandon the genre.
I think that Murrieta, from our view, we are obliged. We are obliged to maintain this style, and I feel like we are part of the history of these wines, and I think that being part of the history, we are obliged, as I said to you, to maintain the style of the wine. So that's why we've been working and working the last year. So it's like, I don't know, I mean, I'm pressured by history. And for many years, many clients have been asking, what are you going to do with, you remember the old Castillo de Gallo White? Are you going to release it? It's been a secret until today. Why? Because it was a challenge for us, and we were not really sure that we could create the same quality as before. It was a challenge. It's a personality, this wine, and let's see if you like it. A part that people could understand this style, because it's a unique style. The only problem here is that the production is very, very tiny, very small.
But I guess it makes sense that a family from Galicia that had a history of making white wine would appreciate the white wine potential of a region, even when the rest of Rioja was largely abandoning that potential. There wasn't so much investment in white wines from Rioja at the time that you decided to reinvest in Capilano.
In Galicia, we'd always been next to the young Albariño, creating the young Albariños. In some way, Levi, our style of Albariño, Pazo de Barrantes, is not the same as the rest. Because we try to offer to the Albariño, we are not just looking after a fresh, fruity white wine. It's a serious, deep, well-structured Albariño. We are one of the only wineries working for a minimum of 4 months with the, how do you call it, with the lease, trying to offer to the wine more muscle, more structure. So we've been always next to these young wines. We'd always seen the potential of the whites from Marqués de Murrieta, potential of wines being aged in oak. So my father was totally in love with that. We jumped there. We continue with that project. As you said, we invested a lot of money in this Capellania wine and trying to maintain the identity of our old style of whites, but trying to show what could be the new era of these whites. And that's why after this knowledge with the balance of white grapes or white wine and barrel and oak, we decided to bring this philosophy to Galicia. And as I said before to you, and create this new concept called La Contesse, the Pazo de Barrantes, offering this balance between Albariño grape and French oak.
In terms of growing the grapes and then handling them on the production side, how does Viura contrast or compare to Albariño?
First thing, in terms of, I think that they're two totally different grapes, totally different yields per hectare. Yields per hectare of Albariño, it's around 12,000 kilograms. In Rioja, Viura, we are talking about 7,000 kilograms
per hectare. So
like almost half. I really don't believe in the Viura when it's young. Why? Because it's a grape that is not offering you so much. Nothing to do with the Albariño.
It's not fruit driven.
No, exactly. You don't have a lot of fruit. It's neutral. It's not offering you a lot. But when this Viura is aged in barrel, in oak, this makes the difference. Because you, from this barrel and after some time in bottle, you obtain a wine that is really complex, really elegant, a wine that it's a gastronomy wine. It's a sommelier wine because it's a wine that you could match with so many different kinds of food. It's a wine that needs some fat, a food with fat like ham, like codfish, like suckling pig. Cheese is wonderful, this wine. So it's nothing to do Albariño and Viura, but both of them are offering in different moments really attractive things. Albariño when it's young, Viura when it's aged for a long time in barrel and in bottle.
You age the Albariño a great deal on the lees, but does Viura and lees, does that work well or is it different?
Yes.
Same.
Yeah, same. Exactly the same. What we try to create in both wines are serious, well-structured wine, wines that have a big muscle, wines that could last for many years in the bottle. Of course, in each wine you could see this high balance acidity. You see that I use the word high and balance because sometimes you could see high acidity, but it's not balanced. And I feel that balance the same as in life. It's really important in wine, and you have acidity in these wines. It's incredible now to taste a 20-year-old Albariño from Pazo de Barrantes, or to taste a open levy bottle of Castillo y Gay 2 weeks ago, 1946 Castillo y Gay White, and the bottle was incredible. The evolution of these wines in bottle are unique. Because of the acidity, the freshness that you could see in the wines, the long aging in oak, you could see a high, a well-structured wine that if it's kept in perfect conditions, you could see that these wines are, for me, my favorite white wines in the world.
So a lot of times when people talk about Tempranillo-based wines, or especially when they're made along classic lines, they talk about long-aging wines that hit a plateau of aging and stay in that plateau for a long time. Mm. Is that true for the white as well?
It's true for the white, for the Viuda, really true for the Viuda. And as you know, there's some wines apart from our wine in Rioja that you could see how Viuda could last for many, many years when it's been aged in oak, okay? When it's been aged in oak. You were talking about Tempranillo, and I think that Tempranillo is already demonstrated. It's been demonstrated that Tempranillo, after being aged in oak and in bottle for many, many, many years, the evolution of this grape in bottle is unique. It's wonderful.
There are a few producers who use a percentage of Graciano, either small or large, but there's not so many producers in Rioja really focusing in on addition of Mezuelo. What really caused you to make that decision?
Rioja is a large wine region. We're talking about between 400 to 450 millions of kilograms per year. This means more or less 400 million of bottles per year are produced in Rioja. Not every single grape in Rioja is owned by wineries. And in really an important percentage of this grape, you could say 70%, 75%, is owned by grape growers and it's owned by cooperatives. So this means that the quality, that the grapes, is not controlled by wineries. So at the end, these grapes that you said, Graciano, Mazuelo, grapes that they are from Rioja, but they are not really ideal for grape growers or for cooperative to look after them. Why? Because they are hard. They're difficult to grow them up. Why? Because a Mazuelo, for example, it's always really sensitive to diseases, always problems with Mazuelo. Graciano, exactly the same. So they prefer to produce Tempranillo, that is a strong grape, offering alcohol, offering yields. And these grape growers, cooperatives, concentrate in Tempranillo and offer Tempranillo to many, many of these wineries. In Igai, this is different. We control our vineyards, we control our grapes. So for many years, we've been next to this small grapes, small in terms of quantities, Graciano and Mazuelo, because we think that these grapes offer a lot of complexity to our wines and offer really attractive things to our wines. As I said before, Graciano and Mazuelo offers high acidity to the wines, offer tannins to the wines. And I feel that now with this climate changed, these grapes are really, really important.
You need that acidity.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really, really important to maintain them in your state. Not just maintain them. The last 40 acres we planted, it's all Mazuelo and Graciano. So we are really investing in these two grapes because of the complexity that these grapes offer to the wine, but especially because of this acidity that is offering to the wine. And when you create wines that they're going to be aged for a long time in oak, a long time in bottle, you need this acidity. You demand this acidity. So hard to see them in Rioja. Just those who control the vineyard still maintain these grapes. Apart from this, we in Igai, in Murrieta, apart from maintaining them, we are investing day by day in these grapes. So all our wines now have or Graciano or Mazuelo apart from Tempranillo. Marqués de Murrieta wines, the Reserva, it's basically Tempranillo, 80% of Tempranillo. And then we blend this Tempranillo with these grapes, Graciano, Mazuelo. And it's the only red wine, Levy, that we are adding Garnacha, Garnache, red Garnache. Small percentage, 3%, 4%, trying to offer to the wine more fruit, more color to the wine. And this is the only wine that offers Garnacha. Remember I told you Dalmau offering Tempranillo, Graciano, and Cabernet Sauvignon, and Castillo di Gai, Tempranillo, and just Mazuelo. So these grapes are really, I could say, not the key grapes, because Tempranillo is really important, but they're the grapes that really make our wines distinctive and unique, these grapes.
What should I understand about the Igai Estate Vineyard? I mean, is it at different elevations? Is it at different exposures? Or is that more uniform? Or
Igai Estate, it's 800 acres. I'm now talking acres.
800 hectares would be pretty amazing.
It's a pity. It's a pity.
It's 800 hectares. We make a lot.
One day yeah. We will go one day. Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to seed it. 800 acres in different altitudes, different valleys, different plots, of course, different grapes, as I said to you before. Basically, different soils. You could see the, you call it a chalky clay, basically, with a lot of river stones, different soils, different altitudes, different aging of the vines. I could say that the average age is 40 years old, more or less, but you could find inside the guide 100-year-old vines, the whites, the Viura that is going to Capellania and to Castillo. The age of this Viura is 99-year-old, so you see the oldest one inside the guide. The old vine that we are planting now will not be part of our project until they are minimum 10, 12 years. So what we do is, or we harvest them and we see how they are, how is the evolution of this grape, and then we sell bulk, you call it. No, we sell them, or sometimes we sell this grape when they are young. But minimum we need 10, 12 years until the vine is its form. You have wood there. And after that, grapes will jump into Marqués de Murrieta wines at the beginning, and then in the future to Dalmau, Castillo di Gai, or if we talk about whites, Capellania or Castillo di Gai.
So when your father purchased the estate, he also did a lot of revitalization and investment in the winery facility.
Yes. Big investment done by my father. Big investment done by his son, by me. Remember I told you, new team, new wines, invested in especially in equipment, in the barrel. And now, 9 years ago, we began to update all the winery. It's going to be based in three steps. First step is finished. We restored the outside of all the winery, the buildings, of all the buildings. It's all made of stone. It's 40,000 square meters. I restore all the buildings. We just began, Levy, an important investment, something like in dollars, it's a 33 million investment now in the new winery. We are updating, renewing all the winery, new fermentation area, two different fermentation area, one for the tiny production wines, one for Marqués de Murrieta wines, new barrel aging building, new bottling line, new labeling line. This began 2 months ago, and it will finish end of 2017. This is the second step to update all the winery, the production area. And there's a third step. As soon as we fill all this new winery with all the wines we have in the old winery, the old winery will be transformed into, could be a guest house. But I'm thinking in doing a small guest house with 20 rooms for all these clients that are coming from different parts of the world that could stay at the winery. could stay next to the vineyard and next to the wine for 1-2 days. So the total project will be finished for 2020, more or less, 2020. I'm going to be 20 years. It's going to take me to update all the winery because the first step was too long. Was 9-10 years because everything was made by hand, stone by stone, by hand. So it's been crazy in terms of timing. It's been crazy in terms of investment. And now I have like 7 more years between winery and this guest house, 6 years more. And meanwhile, at the same time, updating the winery in Galicia, new equipment there also. At the same time, if I could see a nice investment in a key area, wine area of Spain.
In a different region.
Different region. With the same philosophy, we have own vineyards, small quantities, quality. I could jump into it. I'm not really looking for one, but I'm open. I'm open that if there's anyone that wants, for any reason to, because of family reasons or because any reason to offer it to us, I'm open. I'm open to discuss with them to, I don't know, we could jump into a new area. And there are wonderful areas, wine areas in Spain, like in the south of Spain, Jerez is wonderful, or other key red wine regions in Spain, like Bierzo, or like Toro, or like Ribera del Duero, nice regions, like I could jump there where other wineries are doing wonderful wines. I think that Levi, Spain is in a great moment now. Great moment. I think that we are offering really high quality wines. I think that in Spain you could see not just quality, you could see many, many different kinds of wines. Wine culture in Spain is really, really deep. And you could see something that it's attractive for market like U.S.
Dalmau, Cebrián Sagarita's father, invested in a historic winery and encouraged his son to do the same. Thank you very much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time, Levi.
Dalmau, Cebrián Sagarita of Marques de Murrieta in Rioja region of Spain, and also in Galicia with Pazo de Barrantes. Thanks for listening. If you're on iTunes or you use the podcast app, we highly recommend that you go subscribe to the show. Subscription is free, of course, and you will see new episodes appear in your feed quicker than you would otherwise. While you're there, if you'd like to leave a comment and a rating in iTunes, we'd be pretty excited about that, to tell you the truth. We had some nice comments come across on iTunes lately, and whenever that happens, it not only increases our ranking within iTunes, which is important, it also makes for some good love and feeling, and I personally appreciate it a lot. I want to thank you also to those of you who have donated to the show. A real big thanks. Thank you. Thank you. You can find back episodes of the show at alldrinktothatpod.com. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, we are there at drinktothatpod. We also have a Facebook page, and some good episode quotes go up on there from time to time. I'm on Instagram at Levy Opens Wine, that's with an I, Levy Opens Wine, with some wine-related pics and snaps, and you can find episode write-ups and warm-ups on vinography.com. Thank you, Alder. Our retail partner is the fabulous Crush Wine and Spirits in Manhattan, which is awesome, and we offer a streamlined and easy wine club through Crush if you are interested in drinking what you hear about. Contact me at levyopenswine@gmail.com if you want to know more about the wine club. We'll see you next episode for another wine read by its author or for another dip into life at cellar temperature. Thanks for listening.